they have a dilemma whether to cooperate with current or not. And then finally they decided to let every candidate decide by themselves. So half of the candidates, the city council candidates support Ke, and half of them oppose Ke. Yeah. So it's very interesting for study there. That's a little bit over the time now. So let me spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes to talk about the midterm exam. The midterm local election as the midterm exam as well. It is a little bit different from the midterm election for the US because it is not a national election here. It's about local, but we still can took this as an indicator of how the ruling party performed. So in most of time, in most of countries, midterm exam is always a very big test for the ruling party, because in these 2 years, there must be many unfinished jobs, or even if you have some reforms, it may not have time to finish them. And then people will vote directly according to their pocketbook. I mean, so if you do not feel that the economy goes well in these 2 years, then you will punish the ruling party. It's the same in almost every country. It is what happened in Taiwan now. So the disapproval rate of Taiwan is very high. As I mentioned, she faces challenges from both sides of the spectrum. Also, she faces challenges from the new spectrums, I mean the conservative anti-gay groups that make coalition with KMT. So it's very a big challenge for her. In Kaohsiung, where DPP ruled for in the last 20 years, two decades, there's a DPP fatigue. Even if the candidate of DPP, Chen Ching-mai, it seems like he stayed in the Kaohsiung for two decades and well prepared. If you look at the platforms and his policies, he's well prepared. But people do not trust him. I mean, it's just like a very popular style. It's very similar. If you look at the debate, the TV debate between Hillary Clinton and Trump, it's the case, very similar. So for example, the popular style KMT candidate Han Guoyu, there's a fact check. So 9 out of 11 facts are false by Han Guoyu, but people still trust that he can bring some change here. He brings hope to people. People trust him, and people just don't trust the traditional political elites from a long-term ruling DPP in Kaohsiung. That's the main story, I think, why Kaohsiung turned to KMT. Also, in the survey, the non-partisanship is reached the all-time high. So more than half of people do not recognize them as, or do not think that they are affiliated with any big parties. All-time high. The first time that reached over 51%. So I think this is a very similar story worldwide, that political parties, traditional elites, are losing their trust from people. So, and also, Kaohsiung is an industrial city. So it is very similar to what happened in the Rust Belt. So people are very disappointed that people think that they are the losers of the globalized economy. Although in Taiwanese context, the economic cleavage is whether you have advantage in the economy with China. I mean, because most of the economy are with China. So it's different. So in the US, the President Trump thinks that attribute the economic loser to global trade, and China is the cause of their poverty. But in Taiwan, it's a little bit different because China brings a lot of fortune to the in terms of trade to Taiwan. So the context is different, but the story is similar. Also, there are tens of randoms as a new mobilizing tools. I have to see, because it's very new, so I have to see my notes here. So, if we look at the district data, the macro data, we do not have the micro data yet. So maybe 1 or 2 years later, we will have the micro data. That is another example how social science lag behind the real world. But if we look at the macro data first, in this election, where DPP lost their votes is where they got the most support in 2016. So DPP, that means in 2016 the higher support of Tsai Ing-wen, those districts, the DPP lost more votes in this time. So that means President Tsai just cannot get the trust from both the stronghold of DPP, also from not to mention to winning the trust from different sides. But there's an interesting phenomenon that in those places where DPP lost the votes, it is more tend to vote for yes for the name change. I mean the referendum number 13, the name change of Taiwan from Chinese Taipei to Taiwan. So that means the pan-green voters also punish DPP. Okay. So my brief conclusion is that this is not really a game for KMT, nor a pro-China term for Taiwan. Although, if you look at the reports from international media, you will see a lot of reports like that.
Can you explain why you make a conclusion of it's not really a game for KMT?
Yes. So if you look at the local Congress, this is aggregate votes for the nine different elections. Very shortly, you can see that from 2014 to 2008, this year, KMT only gains less than 1% for the aggregate votes. DPP lost about 6%. And if you look at the local Congress, KMT gains about 3.5%. That is not very much. They gained 8 seats totally, island-wide, compared to 1 million votes for their mayor and the magistrate gain. In the mayoral election, this is very minor. So they only gained 3.5% on the local congressman. And DPP lost 53 seats, about 6% votes. And most of votes goes to the independents or the small parties like the New Power Party. Lastly, let me spend some time for this time. I think the election is also reflects how China used their sharp power. And I quote the New York Times that this is a Russian style meddling in these elections. As we can see, the web army, that is Wang Jun, a huge amount of netizens showing up from foreign IP address, then they appear on almost every public forums online. Also, if you go to Taiwan, you can see on the TV shows that a majority of time, I mean, more than 60% or 70% of time are devoted to reporting the very good side of KMT. So some people guess that there's no direct evidence for Wang Jun, but we can observe a very abnormal huge amount of people coming from foreign IP on almost everywhere. And so there are some very interesting observations. So for one researchers, use very informal experiment that he creates his own YouTube channel, for example, and then make some videos for campaigning for KMT. And he found that about 40% of the users are coming from not outside of Taiwan. So there's a lot of people coming from out of Taiwan to have their message or join the discussion in these elections. Almost all of them are not supporting DPP, and also they say very good sides of KMT candidates. But also, the US officials also warned that Taiwan is vulnerable to the disinformation from China, especially the AIT chairman, Mr. James Moriarty. But the interview on the TVBS, the media, was censored by the media. So I think this is very interesting, because in China, if you look at the Weibo of the US embassy, the Chinese government cannot or do not delete any comments from the US embassy. However, in Taiwan, the interviews by the US ambassador or the US AIT was just censored. So it's a very interesting phenomenon there. So I would say that the signal of the election to the international media or international world is very negative. That is, China, Taiwan is going to become pro-China again, something like that. Also, I don't have time to talk about the marriage equality issue, because all of the referendum is voting against the marriage equality. However, I think this is also showing why we have to look more deeply behind China's sharp power, because there are just too many signs that there's some foreign meddling there. Yeah. So that is my presentation today. Thank you very much.
So for Q&A, if you wouldn't mind just stating your name and affiliation, but I'd open the floor to questions.
Yes, Tina Chong with Voice of America. So after this election, how do you see President Tsai adjusting her policy? If this is not related to cross-strait issues, does she need to make any recalibration of the policy?
So next, within about one year or more, there will be a national election for the president, and also the legislature. So domestically, I think that people are dissatisfied because her reforms are too many, too much, and too unclear about the directions. So although she is keeping the promise on the making some reforms on transitional justice, the Laborers Act, the gay marriage, and many other policy dimensions, but people do not know what exactly the government wants to do. And she is criticized that she always compromises with the conservative part. So she has to make it very clear what she wants to do and what the results the government wants to do. That is my opinion in the domestic area. Also, in this election, also Tsai Ing-wen repeated several times that China has some sharp power, and China there's a sign that China may interfere with the election, but nobody trusts or care. I mean, because for example, she says that China is pouring a lot of time and money into the web, when she is promoting a Yilan candidate, Chen Opo. But the candidate is highly unpopular. So that means the DPP, the traditional political elite has to do something to make people trust you again. I mean, that includes your promise to be more, use some easy words to communicate with people. Also, your commitment to do more for the people, not for the more traditional elites or traditional factions, for example, in Yilan's case or in other places. So that's a very big challenge for DPP itself to persuade people.
Yeah, but what I wanted to ask you was the China policy, her policy for China. Does this mean that she doesn't have to do anything, just keep on her position?
Oh, So what happened in, if we dated 10 years, dated back to 10 years ago, what happened to Chen Shui-bian's second term is that he moves from here to here because he is losing the popularity. And then what he can do is to maintain his power or maintain his government is that he has to seek a coalition from this side. And then everybody knows the story that in the second term after 2006, I think, then there's a chaos for the foreign policy. Yeah. But I think overall Taiwan's performance right until now is relatively, I mean, she should not change a lot, especially for the equilibrium between China and the US. I think she's very, she maintains a low-key style and to maintain a good relationship with the U.S. And then the U.S. has had many policies like the Taiwan Travel Act and many more cooperative plans are on the way, especially in the military and the trade part. I don't think there must be some change on the foreign policy, but she has to change the way she communicate or she persuade people why this is the case, why we need to face the challenges from the China. Okay, so actually I support the policies of her foreign policy, especially in the context of the US China, the so-called new Cold War. So I don't think there's a something called status quo or something called neutral. It is very different. It is very difficult to maintain what is a neutral stance between the two sides, especially under Trump administration. He's forcing everyone to, in a good or bad way, forcing the coalition members to make some contributions. So what happened in Chen Shui-bian's second term happened again, then I don't think the Thai administration can get trust from the U.S. government, nor can she get the trust from the China's government. Yeah.
I have two questions. The first, I'm Dana Chen from World Journal. The first question is, let's continue to the last question, the answer you have. So that means you don't feel like Tsai Ing-wen need to go a little bit pro-China, I mean her policy, like to work friendly with China, with the PRC part. This is my first question. My second question will be, since Tsai Ing-wen is still in power, and she claimed that China meddling the campaign, that's way before the election, maybe past 2 months. Why she's not doing anything? And how about for the next election, the upcoming one? Do you feel like she has a way to make a progress to prevent more this kind of influence?
Thank you for the question. Both of them are very important. First one, she is always very friendly to China, except the 1992 consensus. She has she has done everything to maintain a good relationship with China. In every speech, she said that we want to be very friendly, we don't want confrontation, we will maintain the status quo, we will maintain the constitution, we will do everything according to the constitution. She does not reply to the Deep Green part. She banned the party members to join any events held by the number 13 referendum. She has done everything. So, and she, after this election, she reiterated again that we want to maintain a good relationship with China. But I think the cross-strait relations, most of the time, the cross-strait relations are determined by CCP, not determined by Taiwan. That is the point. So even if you say, I don't think anything she can say to maintain the goodwill. So everything is goodwill. So that is also why she is criticized by the Deep Green part, that we should do more to something like we should declare independent, we should hold more referendum, something like that. But she resisted. She resisted what Chen Shui-bian's facing the challenge from the Deep Green part. So in terms of cross-strait relations, in terms of the foreign policies, I think she has done everything she could, and it's quite successful. I don't think there's much we should change. Yeah. And the second question, I don't have very good answer right now, because there are a huge amount of discussions on how can we defend democracy, because there's a great dilemma in the democracy. If you look at the definition of sharp power, that is authoritarian regimes use the freedom of speech in the democracies to interfere the function of the government, something like that. Because freedom of express is a core of democracy, but some country has to do, the country democratic countries has to do something to defend at least some fake news or disinformations. But there's no, so far, I don't think there's good answer for this. Even in the Europe, you can see France and Germany are having debate on this issue. But I do have to point out that the national security, I mean the National Security Bureau, the bureau, mm-hmm. Is criticized, but that they are doing nothing. Also NCC, I mean the National Communication Committee, that is the part that in charge of the news and the every media, they are doing nothing. I think they are doing nothing. So there should be something to do, but we are still talking about the solutions, and there's no good answer right now. Yeah, please.
Last question.
I'm John. I'm a freshman at a school. Do you see Taiwan being forced to choose a side in the future with China's aggression and possibly asking for more presence of military power in the United States? And if that is the case, do you see Taiwan being a frontier of possible military conflict between China and the U.S.?
Well, yes. as a small state, between the two major powers, I don't think the small states have a lot of freedom to freely choose their national future. So that's why, I mean, the previous studies all have some conditionalities. So under certain conditions, how do you choose? And there's a lot of people choosing status quo. That is no specific answer right now. I don't think there will be a specific answer. I mean, maybe if the conflicts between the U.S. and China escalate, then maybe we will be forced to choose sides in the future. But it still have some complicated conditions that especially between the relationship between China and the US. Also, we have to look closely to what happened in China next, because there's a great pressure for their domestic politics, especially after this trade war. The Communist Party will face a lot of challenges. But also, some theory predicts that it is in the authoritarian regime, when they face domestic challenges, then they will use force convert their domestic pressures. So I don't have a good question for you.
Well, thank you so much for your timely analysis, and thanks for everyone for joining us at the Seeger Center. Please join me in thanking Fang Yuchen.